News items about sexual assaults on college campuses come along frequently these days, even when the reports produce some doubts, as with the recent Rolling Stone article about the University of Virginia. It's clear there is great concern about sexual assault on campus, great enough for Congress to consider new legislation. A Senate committee heard testimony last week, part of the process of writing proposed federal legislation on campus sex assault. One of the people who testified is Angela Fleischer of Southern Oregon University. SOU is home to a sexual assault response program that is gaining notice around the country. Angela Fleischer is SOU's Assistant Director of Student Support and Intervention for Confidential Advising, which is quite a title, but thanks for joining us, Angela.
Thanks for having me here.
And Jody Waters is here as well. She's the Associate Provost at SOU and Director of Graduate Studies and the Title IX Deputy Coordinator. Did I get all of your titles right?
You did, yeah.
All right, a lot to consider here. So how long has there been a campus-based program to address sexual assault at SOU?
We just launched this program formally in the fall of this year, although we've been making strides toward it since the spring of 2013.
And does it actually, I know that in discussions with the folks at the Ashland City Police a couple of times about the You Have Options program, it seems like this is a direct offshoot of that. Tell
Absolutely.
Us how those work together.
Yeah. Well, both programs offer choice of timeline and choice of types of reporting to survivors coming forward, and they work really well together because it is all victim directed. The interviewing techniques are similar, and the whole point is to offer to a student their whole panacea of options that are available to them when they're coming forward to report. So to offer them the options that are available on campus, to offer them the options that are available through law enforcement. And law enforcement is pledging to do the same thing, to give them accurate information and give them time to make decisions about what they want to do and how they want to proceed. And so that's sort of the way that they work together really well, is we're expecting that people in both places, law enforcement officers and college administrators, are going to have equal and accurate information about both processes and be providing that to the people that come forward to report.
But the real key here is that this is not handled like a burglary investigation or something like that, because you do have somebody who's been in a very sensitive situation.
Yes, absolutely. And there's a big departure from traditional policing in the You Have Options program in terms of that. There's not a linear rapid fire questioning of survivors. It's more of a tell me what you can about what happened to you. And the university is approaching things similarly and making sure that people are supported in information and choice before asking them to proceed with any process.
Now, when we talk about the university proceeding with a separate system, Jody, as the Title IX Deputy Coordinator, you probably know at least as much about this as anybody, but I understand there are some complications with Title IX of the Civil Rights Act that creates certainly some hoops to jump through for some campuses in who actually can be involved in this kind of program.
Well, I think some of the complications are, and I'm not sure what specifically you're referring to. You might have something specific in mind, but a lot of the complications are simply that a lot of campuses are just not prepared or haven't been prepared or haven't been structured in a way that allows this kind of response and the, I guess, the appropriate steps that, for example, that Angela is describing, to really focus on what the victim may or may not identify as most appropriate to his or her needs. So some of the steps have been just being able to identify folks who are prepared, folks who can act as confidential advisors, folks who are available and accessible, and to create a campus discussion or a campus conversation that makes it clear where and how to come forward when a situation occurs.
I have read a couple of times, what I've read a couple of times is that Title IX has certain requirements,
right,
about,
yes, absolutely.
About reporting periods, something like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of, and in fact, these are discussions that we consider to be really, really vital and really vibrant, because they kind of get at what and how we prioritize, not scarce resources, but certainly resources that are limited in terms of being able to do all of the things that we not only have to do but want to do. So there are reporting periods, there are steps that need to be taken, there are documentation processes that have to be carried out with the most extreme diligence, and in some cases they come at, for example, you know, we're sitting on essentially day one of winter break. So if hypothetically we were to take a complaint, we would need to work around the fact that there are students not on campus, that there may be some faculty, there may be some administrators and staff who are not as accessible. That's not really an option that we have, is to say, well, we had to put it off for, you know, X number of weeks while there was nobody on campus.
And universities and colleges that don't have a confidential advising provision then don't have an option for students to report confidentially and give students the time to figure out what they want to do. A university is then on notice and has 60 days to conduct, complete, and have a resolution to an investigation.
So it is done more like police work in that sense.
It is, yeah. Yes. And with the idea of let's get this taken care of as quickly and swiftly as possible and put it away. And the other issue that comes into play there then is that if there is a criminal investigation possibility, the university's actions can often hinder that investigation because law enforcement investigations take longer than 60 days. And so perhaps the suspect has been put on alert already that people are asking questions and that gets in the way of police work.
So the existence of a job like yours, confidential advising, then really makes this program possible at SOU?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So it's interesting that it had to be carved out. So, and it seems like what we hear a lot about with sexual assault situations on other campuses, that there is a separate campus process while the law enforcement process is going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And does Campus Choice blend those a little better somehow?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, I mean, in all fairness, college administrators aren't trained in criminal justice processes and the criminal justice system, right? And we're talking about a serious crime. And the way that this has traditionally been practiced is the way that it's being done around the country. And now colleges are saying, and people are saying, and federal government is saying we need to do it differently. And so people are in that uncomfortable place of trying to blend, to mold, to have administrators who are more informed and can present all of the options to students.
We're talking about sexual assault in campus situations with Angela Fleischer and Jody Waters of Southern Oregon University. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. The phone number here, 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760. Email jx@jeffnet.org. Jody, you were winding up to say something, and I got right in the middle there.
Well, we also have an awful lot of folks for whom we are in a relatively positive situation where we have a relationship with the Ashland Police Department, a really close one. Angela's been responsible for an awful lot of that around this particular issue. But it's not a given that college campuses and the administration have any kind of relationship, let alone a positive one, with law enforcement agencies who frequently view what happens on college campuses when the administration or other aspects step in as hindrances, as obstacles, and somewhat adversarial. I recently went to a conference in Seattle where we were focusing on this and heard an awful lot of stories from colleagues at other schools and a lot of advice and guidance on how to negotiate and how to work within a pretty counterproductive law enforcement educational institution situation, which I don't think has anything to do with any particular sense of enmity between the two, but simply that there is not a vocabulary, there's not often a relationship, there's not a relationship that enables those conversations to flow smoothly and one that protects the students. So the student may on one hand be hearing from their institution that they are, able to access certain resources or that they have rights, but they are hearing something a little bit different from the law enforcement agency or in some cases vice versa. So we really do have an extraordinary foundation, extraordinary base here that we work from.
Given as new as it is, this is basically the first quarter you've had a chance to put this into effect at SOU, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
How much use has Campus Choice gotten?
Quite a lot. We have already more than half of the reports we had for the entire year in this first quarter. So we saw from spring of 2013 onto this school year, we saw sort of a doubling in reports when we weren't officially doing the program yet. And I anticipate that it will double, if not triple again in this school year.
And do you think that's because people feel more comfortable coming forward?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I think when you hear about a system, you can trust that people will use it.
So how does the information get from the U.S. Senate to you? I mean, and did you think you were being punked when you first saw whatever message it was that made the request for your presence?
No. In June of this year, Detective Carrie Hull flew back for a series of roundtable hearings with Senator McCaskill.
She's with the Ashland Police.
With the Ashland Police, correct. And participated in sort of the information gathering for the first round of this Campus Accountability and Safety Act, which is what we were talking about at these hearings. And so they had contacted Carrie again about this hearing, and she was unable to do it. So they recommended that I go out there. So it wasn't out of nowhere that the invitation came.
And in fact, the You Have Options program from the city police has gotten a great deal of scrutiny, not just congressional testimony, but also some training sessions, I understand. One that was here in Ashland in October. We talked to some folks before that got started, and I heard just this morning a couple of other trainings set up in different parts of the country as well.
Yeah, I believe there are 6 trainings scheduled for 2015, and we'll be there as well, offering campus choice to entities as well. So we'll have 3 regional trainings, and they'll have and 3 here as well.
So when you say campus choice was beginning to work in the spring quarter of earlier this year, then, and it wasn't even officially started, so you were beginning to use the elements of the program even before it, you know, was officially established?
Yes, that's correct.
And so describe the situation then. You get to talk to Claire McCaskill's Senate. Was it a committee, subcommittee, what?
Yeah, the Crime and Terrorism Subcommittee of the Senate Judiciary.
Okay, and so this, since it wasn't the full Judiciary Committee, you probably didn't have the full 22, 25, whatever it is, all these people making speeches before you, or did you?
We didn't. There were about 8 senators participating, and I was told that that's quite a good representation for a subcommittee. And most of them did make statements about how they view this issue. And really, for me, it was heartening that they took it seriously, that they were wanting to do something about it. And so it was nice to hear what they had to say. And I particularly was pleased with what Senator Whitehouse had to say. And he was the one who had held the hearing.
Senator Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island?
Yes.
And what did he have to say?
He had a lot of understanding of victim and survivor experience. And he had a lot of, I thought, from a compassionate perspective, understanding of what law enforcement deals with as well as what colleges dealt with. And it sounded like he was really coming from the place of genuinely wanting to have legislation that's going to help both entities work better together.
And what are some of the obstacles then that legislation would address? I mean, what are some of the things that legislation could correct?
Well, one of the things the current version of this bill is addressing is holding colleges more accountable for having a more rigorous investigative procedure. It's also asking colleges to have a position like mine, and much of what is in the bill, reflected in the bill, is based on my position here. This hearing in particular that I attended was about what can they add into the bill to support law enforcement, to ask law enforcement to do things differently. And so they're looking at ways that they can sort of, I'm wanting to not use the word force, but I guess that's all that's coming to my force,
enable.
Collaboration,
enable.
Collaboration.
Communications proficiency.
That's right, exactly. Between law enforcement and colleges. They also are looking at asking law enforcement and colleges to be trained in the forensic experiential trauma interview technique. And those are the things that they're looking at. What I was told last was that this bill would be going before Congress in January. I don't know if that's still the intention, given that they're looking at making some revisions to it.
Well, it'll be new Congress, so everything has to be introduced as if it were brand new.
Right, that's true.
All over again, and obviously with different people in control of it as well. We're talking to Angela Fleischer and Jody Waters of Southern Oregon University about sexual assault response on campus through the Campus Choice Program. Angela just came back from Washington, D.C., where she got to testify before a Senate subcommittee about what goes on at SOU and what might be contained in federal legislation that could emulate what goes on at SOU. 800-838-3760, if you want to discuss this topic on the Jefferson Exchange, 800-838-3760. Email jx@jeffnet.org. Check out Angela and Jody in their Facebook picture from a few moments ago as well, all about the social media. Given the experiential the counseling part of this, help me understand this a little bit, because how long a process does it take to get somebody trained in this to do it well?
Well, part of these trainings that will be offered next year through the Ashland Police Department will include these, and there will be 3-day sessions where people can be trained in this, and it is lengthy. It is a lengthy process, but the results that it yield are worth the time and investment put in, because not only do have people more willing to come forward and having a more positive experience with the interview, you're actually gathering better evidence and data through these interviewing techniques.
This sounds like an outgrowth of what has been done at children's advocacy centers for 20 and 30 years now, where instead of the interview in the tiled room with the fluorescent lights, you put people in a comfortable environment with people who are warm and friendly and not necessarily wearing badges.
Yes, yes, absolutely. It is very much like the way that children are interviewed. Yeah.
And so What are the frequent circumstances? I mean, I know from having talked to the folks at Ashland Police several times now about the You've Got Options program, they point out that sexual assaults do tend to be more common in towns with colleges, hence Ashland's program. Obviously, the campus now has Campus Choice as well. What are some of the techniques that come into play, not just for response, but also for prevention, ways to get the word out, to put the information in the hands of people who might be vulnerable, who might be perpetrators even?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, one of the things, and you just said it, is people who are on college campuses are vulnerable. So we need to put the information in the hands of all of our students. And for me, the thing that I think is the most important is that we educate our students and our younger people in grade school, middle school, and high school about consent. And that's the best information that you can give anyone. The other thing I would say is I think having a robust response to sexual assault is also prevention. When people know that the issue is taken seriously and handled, that's preventative.
There was a piece, I'm not sure if you saw it yesterday, but there was a piece of writing in the New York Times Sunday Magazine written by the writer had been reflecting on experiences that she had as a young person in college in which she found herself involved in a sexual experience that she did not want to have. And the article really focuses on the linguistic experience that she had, where she didn't have the word that she felt really described her experience, which was that she'd said no, but neither she nor the partner that she was with really experienced that as a clear sense of her real powerful resistance to what was going on. And so she describes just basically acquiescing to the act and then reflecting on it later and realizing that it was not only, not having the words that he would seem to respond to that she felt were forceful enough, but not having the identity. She did not want to be a victim. She did not necessarily want to call him an assaulter or an abuser. And she realizes now that that probably wasn't what would serve her best had she had the opportunity to do it again, but that culturally those were the only categories available to her and that she felt really limited. And so she's musing in the piece about whether or not having structures like this is starting to feel like we're going into a red zone, and whether or not there can be some new and more elaborate coding that is available to folks that allows them to see themselves within a situation that feels so threatening and anathema on both the victim and perpetrator that allows a sexual experience to stop when it stops feeling safe. It was really interesting because I think so much of what we're referring to, in addition to getting information in the hands of folks, is creating a culture where it's just not okay. It's just not acceptable. It's not part of what we do. It's not part of who we are. So it's also giving people a range of ways to think about themselves in that scenario because it feels pretty difficult to be able to do so.
Or creating a culture of consent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just creating in our culture the dialogue of consent around sexual intimacy.
Is that a tough one to get across? Dialogue, I mean, especially in a romantic culture as America tends to be, where everything's supposed to like happen quickly and there are no words and all that stuff.
Right. Well,
having to stop and have a conversation seems stilted to some people, I'm sure.
Yes, absolutely. And I think back to the times I've been in classrooms talking about it, and I will sort of give an example. Like it seems strange to say, is it okay if I kiss you right now? How does it feel if I touch you there? And of course, that always garners laughs. And the way that I try to get around the stiltedness of it is I just tell people, if you have conversation about your sex, you're going to have great sex. It's going to be great. You're going to have consent and you're going to have great sex.
You know, something you were talking about, Jody, too, reminded me that in a conversation previously with Carrie Hull about the You Have Options program, the concept of linguistics and yes and no. And I said, well, I'm aware of situations where it can be yes, 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 no.
No. Yeah.
She pointed out sometimes there is no, no.
Yeah.
In a situation in particular where there's an abusive relationship and the woman knows if she says no, there'll be, the victim knows if he or she says no, there will be abuse.
Right.
So tricky, tricky situations. But how do you resolve the tension, or is it, how do you find the balance between wanting to make sure that people get as gentle a response as possible so that they'll give as much as they need to give to the process and wanting to solve cases as well, mm-hmm. and make sure that perpetrators are stopped?
Well, one of the things we found with both programs is just extending the timeline and letting people have the time they need to gather information about the process leads to people wanting to see those reports through. So just having that time and the time to process leads more people to participate in investigations than we were priorly experiencing. And so we are able to solve more cases and have more reports as well with this happening, because previously people would get into a process and feel catapulted into it. They'd feel like their lives had been hijacked by it. And they would say, no, 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 never mind. And with police, that led to recantations. With colleges, it led to not being able to act. And now people are participating more fully and through the whole process. So it's a win-win is what I'm saying.
I imagine that it's been interesting to watch police departments not get too concerned about, geez, our rape numbers really jumped last year, because it does look bad in your crime reports. But then when you realize, oh, this means more people are coming forward.
Yes. I mean, when we think about this being one of the most underreported crimes in our country, we would expect then, if we have a better system, that our numbers would continue to grow over time. And that is an important thing to understand.
I understand from previous conversations, too, one of the concerns is serial offensing, serial offenders, because of the fact that if somebody has committed sexual assault once and nobody said stop, they'll do it again.
Right. Yes, absolutely. Most people who rape do it more than once.
What kind of impact, I'm just curious to know, given the current context, has the Rolling Stone article had on this, where there's the report of this woman who was gang raped at the University of Virginia? There have been all sorts of ethical and journalistic complications that have arisen since that time. A single source story, apparently. Rolling Stone, I don't know how far they've walked it back at this point, but saying it doesn't look like there's a lot that can be supported in that story. Those things do happen, though, don't they? Do we think?
That people make things up or
no,
elaborate
that people
things.
People do get assaulted. I mean, the fact is that this story might not have been true. But,
yeah.
Sure,
yeah.
Absolutely. And I was really pleased that there were two senators that addressed that and sort of said, we really hope that this story and what's come from it doesn't detract from the issue at large. And my guess would be that something happened to that woman that she didn't want to have happen.
There's also the positive, I think, in the sense that it really reveals how complex some of these situations can be, that there are multiple narratives that can reflect folks' real adherence to some belief or some truth that they have, that they aren't easily – there's not a right and wrong, he said, she said, always that can be determined in a quick and easy set of investigations. So I think it's really important, and I hope if we can take anything away from that, it can be that even really solid diligence can reveal that there's just a lot of complexity and a lot of nuance, and sometimes there's just a lot of pain involved in bringing forward information like that.
All right. The program is called Campus Choice at Southern Oregon University. It mirrors the Ashland City Police's You've Got Options program, which I think we'll see more of in a lot of cities around the country. Angela Fleischer and Jody Waters from Southern Oregon University, thanks so much for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Thank you.